Are you ready to lose your horse in the swamps of sadness?
Let's find out for episode number 22 of the Retro Rewind Podcast.
Retro Rewind Podcast initialized. Mission identified. The never-ending story, 1984. Co-hosts online. Auditory analysis online. All systems nominal.
Welcome to the Retro Rewind Podcast. This is the podcast where we look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago and let you know whether they're still worth revisiting today. You can find the show notes for this episode at retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP22. And there you can also find links to subscribe to the podcast, which we would love. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or using the RSS feed through any podcatcher of your choice. My
What's
name
a podcatcher?
It's something that you play podcasts on.
Oh, I thought maybe it catches the pod racers.
No, not quite.
Okay. Sorry, who are you?
Yeah, I am Francisco Ruiz. I am a dad, a designer, and a dragon catcher of luck dragons.
Oh. Wow,
that wasn't so good.
Do you have a whole collection of them that you catch with?
No, I don't. No. And that, as you know, you love him, maybe, but you know him as my good friend and co-host, Paul Powers. Welcome, Paul.
Hello.
Hello. And my question for you this time is, if you could ride any beast, whether it could be fictional or real, as like essentially a horse or a mount, what would it be?
Yeah. Well, the luck dragon is pretty hard to beat. I was thinking the thing from Avatar.
Oh, that sort of bat bird thing?
Yeah, kind of like what in Krypton and the Man of Steel, the flying creature kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but the luck dragon, at least you have luck with the luck dragon.
That's a
And you can fly thousands of miles apparently. In a night.
that is our main topic, but we're not there yet because we still need to introduce our guest host. Paul, would you actually do the honors this time?
It is my honor and privilege to introduce my wife, Valerie, to the podcast.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome, Valerie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Would you tell us what you do for a living and what is your favorite movie genre?
Okay. I am a secretary and bookkeeper for my dad's book sales business. I work from home. And my favorite genre would probably be historical drama.
Oh, really? Wow. What's an example of a historical drama?
Like movie? Braveheart.
Oh, okay. Or maybe Apollo 13?
Maybe.
Which you can listen to, which was our last episode at RetroRewindPodcast.com/RRP21. A little plug there. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today with us, Valerie.
No problem.
So today we're going to be having our roundtable discussion, whether we think this movie is a classic or second class and why. And then we're going to go to the NewTube segment after that, and we're going to wrap up the show with feedback and contact info.
All right. Alice, do you have our target ready for us?
Alert, alert, target located. Spoilers incoming. Engaging retro rewind reactor.
You are invited to enter a world of enchantment, the world of Falcor, and Atreyu, Inglewood, and the Rockfighter.
I'm very pleased to meet all of you.
Creatures of a boy's imagination. Brought to life by the magic of the never-ending story, rated PG. Now playing. Check newspapers for a theater near you.
That's right.
I don't remember that, where he said, I'm very pleased to meet all of you.
I think it's very hard to tell, but listening to the trailer pre-show, I'm pretty sure that wasn't even the final voice of the Rockbiter.
Right. Oh, so maybe it was an earlier cut.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But speaking of cutting films together, Paul, why don't you tell us the technical details of The NeverEnding Story?
Alrighty. The NeverEnding Story was released in the US of A and I think Germany at the same time on July 20th, 1984. It was made in Germany by director Wolfgang Petersen, who was the director and had screenwriters of German descent and a whole bunch of German workers, and filmed in Bavaria, Germany. It starred Barrett.
Did they have a lot of cake?
A lot of German chocolate cake?
I thought Bavarian was a type of cake.
It's a type of everything. If it comes from that region, it's Bavarian.
All right. Anyway.
Sorry. Also stars Major Dad as the dad.
Gerald McRaney. I thought I recognized him.
Yeah. Along with some other people that you may or may not know. Let's see. The USA / international version runs at about 95 minutes, while the German version actually runs about 102 minutes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Some of the scenes were slightly extended by a few seconds here and there, and it added up to about 7 minutes total. The budget was about $27 million, and it grossed over $100 million worldwide.
Wow.
So success back then.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for those technicals, Paul. Now I'm going to read our memory mind meld of a synopsis of The NeverEnding Story. In the beginning of the story, a boy hides from some bullies in a storage room at school or at a bookstore, where he finds or is given the NeverEnding Story book. Then the book is a story of another boy, Atreyu, trying to stop a monster that is actually good and an evil called the Nothing. He does this while losing his horse, answering a riddle, and befriending many other creatures, including the white dog dragon Valkor, in the process. Turns out, the Nothing is people forgetting the story. The princess in the story says that it is up to the boy reading to say her name and to stop the Nothing. The boy says, "Arefukinumbu," and saves the story and gets to chase the bullies on his dog dragon.
All right, that was a weird collection of our memories.
Yes.
But some were not correct.
Exactly.
Ow!
And I think mostly... Oh, sorry, did you get kicked out of the dream, Paul? Before we get into it, let's do our quickfire predictions for whether we thought The NeverEnding Story was going to be a classic or second class before we watched it. Valerie?
Classic.
Classic. And Paul?
Classic.
And I was super close to undecided, but I think I'm going to have to squeak out a classic also. All right, guys, let's start off with the things we loved and or liked about The NeverEnding Story. Let's have you start us off, Valerie.
Okay. I loved that it was a really unique and creative story, and I loved that it was about the value of imagination, which I think is very important, especially for children.
No, I didn't actually think about it from that perspective, Valerie, but yeah, it is highly imaginative. These are a bunch of creatures, typically in this like type of fantasy world. You would see the typical like dwarf and elf and griffin and things like that, but all these characters you don't really see a lot of in other stories. They seem very unique. Paul, what were your thoughts about the imaginative of the story?
Yeah, I thought it was very creative. Not only the characters, but the settings and the epic long story. To me, it's on par of the likes of Wizard of Oz in the book, actually, where it's very creative with all these characters that come from different backgrounds. So, yeah, I'd have to agree very much with that.
Very cool. Yeah, like I just said, I didn't really think about it in that way, but I definitely latched on to the characters, and I thought they're all really well executed, like from makeup to puppetry, all that I thought was really, really well done. I was surprised this wasn't a Jim Henson property, because I thought they were that good.
Yeah, I agree. The makeup and the puppetry are really well done. Mm-hmm. Except for maybe the Falcor's mouth.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was about to say they did. It was an amazing job of the puppetry that they did with his facial expressions, mm-hmm. and everything was moving so well that it made like his body and the mouth movement, when everything else about hit the rest of his face worked so well. For me, it kind of pointed to that. I was like, I wonder why his arm only goes up and down and sideways.
Yeah, it seemed to me he was almost like lip syncing or lip syncs. It didn't seem like the mouth movements matched so well with the actual words, but that's my take on it. Valerie, what did you think about the characters in particular?
I love the characters.
Did you have a favorite?
No, I like them all.
They're all awesome.
Paul, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask Paul something, so go ahead, Valerie.
Okay. You mentioned the puppetry. I was just going to mention that I thought it was much better than the Labyrinth, because I enjoyed both as a child, but when I saw the Labyrinth as an adult, I thought it was ridiculous.
Oh, really?
I felt like I was watching puppets. Uh-huh. But when I watched this, I forgot they were puppets, and because I was so drawn into the emotional depth of the characters and their interaction.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay,
yeah, cool. I thought the puppetry actually worked in this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd have to agree that it seemed much better than the Labyrinth.
I would say that I would agree with you guys as far as the goblins go. They did look very Muppet-esque. But when you get to Ludo and Hoggle, I would say they're on par with anything in the NeverEnding Story.
Okay, let's take it. Okay, they're on par. So that means that this is the best because they didn't have the goblins weighing them down.
I guess you could make that case. I can see that. Yeah, they definitely did have the NeverEnding Story. Definitely had way more puppet characters that seemed more real. So yeah. In terms of ratios, yeah, I'd say NeverEnding Story did a better job in the visual effects department.
Yeah, I was like, for after the movie ended, I was thinking about the Rockbiter. How it looked like they had human eyes, but the mouth and everything else about it seemed puppet built around it. Mm-hmm. So how did they make that move? You know, that, but feel, it seemed like a costume, but yet it was, maybe it was both costume and puppetry put together. It just looked, but very detailed and very well done.
Yeah. Things were definitely highly detailed, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you guys think about this aspect of something I really liked was, and you actually mentioned it a little bit, Paul, was the variety of settings in this movie. And I just thought everything seemed the world seemed very fleshed out just because of all the different settings they go to. It wasn't like in, for instance, a Star Wars movie, not to diss Star Wars, but like Tatooine's all desert, Hoth is all ice. It's like very uniform until you get to like Naboo or something like that. But I really liked how Fantasia was very variety, had a lot of various places. They had seashores and deserts and jungle and all that. And I thought the way they did the Swamps of Sadness was amazing. I'm curious if they filmed in a real swamp, because it felt that real to me.
I actually felt that way about several of the scenes, of like some of the beach scenes and. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And at one point, I even turned to Valerie. I said, how'd they do that? Is that on a set or is that in real, like in out and open?
Yeah. What did you think about that, Valerie?
Oh, I thought they were great. Yeah. The whole thing is so creative.
Mm-hmm. Was there, I'm curious, what did you guys think about? There were a couple scenes, though, where it seemed very obviously on a soundstage, like when he was, when Atreyu was asleep and Artax was nuzzling him, and he's like, "It's time to eat." That seemed very much on a soundstage, which I thought was kind of jarring when compared to the variety of apparently real life sets. It seemed like, but did that jar you guys at all, or not really?
Not really for me, because it seemed like they were more up on a a hill with the open sky behind them, which is just another scene. Oh, okay. It's another setting.
Oh, cool. Let's go back to you, Valerie. What was something else you really loved or liked about this movie?
Oh, so much. I could talk forever about this movie. Okay.
Would you say that it would be never ending?
Yes. Probably. Okay, well, another thing I liked is that it was genuinely sad and even frightening, which I usually don't like in a children's story because mm-hmm. I don't feel like young kids should have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. But in this story, I really felt like it made it better because it draws you in emotionally, and I don't think the story would be as effective and memorable without that. I want to call it the spooky element. It was quite mm-hmm. scary at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with the
wolf, I forget what the wolf's name was, but was that
like the Gamork or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Gamork. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole movie was kind of spooky with the storm and everything, but it made you kind of on the edge of your seat.
Okay, so just how emotionally drawn in you were.
Yeah, and it didn't bother me like it usually does. I feel like it was well done.
Okay, cool. Were you emotionally drawn in, Paul?
Yeah. In fact, as a kid, I remember it as a kid, but growing up and even in adulthood, whenever I get depressed, I always feel like, well, I remember back to the swamps of sadness of how you can't give in to the depression kind of thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it definitely had an impact on me.
So yeah. I learned how to put my shirts on for movies, and you learned how to combat depression. I think that's about the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, whenever I get depressed, I whine at my horse, "Don't die, fight the sadness."
That's so sweet.
I'm curious. This is kind of going into things we didn't like, but only slightly. So regarding that scene where Atrax...
Yeah.
Artax dies. I remember it as a kid as being super sad. And when we got to that scene, I was watching it with my wife, Christy. And I said, "We're here already?" Because I wasn't ready for the horse to die that quickly. But I was actually not sold on the actor who played Atreo's performance as an adult. I felt like it went bam, 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 too quick. It seemed like it would have been more natural for him to sort of feel a little bit of dread that, oh, my horse is starting to slow down. And I didn't get that sense. I got that sense that everything was happy-go-lucky. And then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, you're sinking. Don't sink. Oh my gosh.
No, because the way I took it as an mm-hmm. adult, he had to block out any
sadness.
Any thoughts of possible sadness of like even the thought of his horse possibly giving into it. Don't even think like that. Don't even think about that because that might put him on a spiral down.
That makes sense, but go ahead.
As an adult, I was drawn in.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what do you guys think about why he didn't sink? I mean, he obviously was sad.
Oh, I thought about that, yeah.
Because he was a strong emotional character. From the moment they introduced him as the one chosen to save the world, mm-hmm. I felt like he did a great job of just being really strong. And that's why your point didn't bother me because I felt like he was naturally confident and strong and kind of a serious child because he had so much responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Along those lines, I actually thought all the acting was really impressive for all the children. I disagree with you. I think it was excellent.
That's a good point. Oh, well, I was just talking about that one scene, not overall. Okay. I thought he did really good overall.
Okay.
And I thought the kid who played Bastion, I feel like that would be a role that you could very easily just dial in especially as a child actor, but he seemed very invested or very much the actor in that role. So I definitely appreciated that. If there's any actor that I didn't think really worked so well was Major Dad. I thought,
yeah.
I don't know if it's just because he was playing a character of this father that was.
He's supposed to be detached.
Yeah, detached. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he did that well.
So much that you kind of didn't like it.
Yeah, let's save that though for later.
Okay.
Paul, was there something else you really liked about this movie?
I did like that scene. I'm going to go back to Valerie on this because I'm blanking right now.
Oh, or another thing I liked?
Yeah, yeah. Go for it, Valerie.
Oh, sure. I wanted to kind of expand on the Swamps of Sadness. That was an example of a great moral lesson that I noticed, and I felt like they were all the way through the movie, which I was really impressed with. Just to name a few, not only the danger of sinking into despair if you give into sadness, but also the Sphinx eyes open only for someone who doesn't know his own worth. So that's a lesson on confidence for kids. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so it's, they open for someone that doesn't know their own. Oh, okay. I was remembering it wrong. I was thinking they open for people that know their own worth.
Well, when they open, then they
doubt
the person.
Them. Yeah, yeah, they doubt themselves. Well, yeah. As they're coming up to it, they're grappling doubt. So it's like if you are strong enough to overcome doubt, then you can walk through, which is very hard to do with those menacing figures right above.
Right.
And the death below you.
And I guess I was remembering it either as a kid or something, whereas they were actually the gatekeepers, the Sphinxes were gatekeepers of people that were overly arrogant. But I think that's probably coming at it from more of an adult's perspective as opposed to a kid's perspective, where kids would probably struggle more with self-confidence. Not that adults don't, but...
Yeah.
So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Go ahead, Val.
I kind of agree with you. I remembered it vaguely as a child thinking it was about being too confident. But then actually Paul helped me realize this, that the real point is about confidence, because you don't want the eyes to open.
Yeah,
because,
totally.
You know, yeah, so it actually is the total opposite. It's about self-confidence for kids, which I do think is important.
Yeah. The eyes do open at the end. So what does that say?
That he was afraid.
And that he's not perfect, that he struggles with it too.
So now why do you guys think that the eyes missed though? Because if these are like, I would think that they would have, built in some sort of targeting system for these eyes. Because really, if you think about it, if they're only aiming at one point, then you could walk essentially at the foot of one Sphinx and be very doubtful and you wouldn't get hit.
That's yeah.
True.
So, think about that, movie makers. Think about that.
I mean, you think about it, but you have to like give way. It's kind of like, all right, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's say that Atreyu was quick and fast enough to dodge it, but only because he started doubting himself as he was walking. He was already halfway through.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
totally. It's kind of like, if he started earlier, he would have been zapped, kind of a thing. And
That totally makes sense. And I think it makes sense that he lasted longer than everyone else in terms of feeling confident, and that's why he was able to make it.
Yeah.
I mean, even Indiana Jones only kneeled down at the last second before he got his head lopped off.
He's not very much of a penitent man.
Exactly. But he needs to work on his Hebrew spelling, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways.
That's anyway.
Ah, darn it. I'm curious. This sort of, you guys talked about a lot about like you were saying this story gives a lot of moral lessons, right, Valerie? That's what you said. Yeah, and I almost felt like I really liked the idea that when Bastion goes into the bookstore and the guy is saying this book's not for you, because it's, how does he phrase it? It's not safe. He says it's not a safe book. I immediately got the idea in my head that that is really compelling, mainly because I think the Bible itself is not a safe book. Ooh. Like it's something that definitely can transform you. I mean, it certainly doesn't transform everybody, but it's something that you maybe have lean your life one way and then all of a sudden, it compels you to go another way. And
it's a double-edged sword that could be used for good or bad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I really liked how there was this sort of distinction between a book that's not going to affect you and one that will. And I just like that idea.
It's like a risk worth taking.
Yeah, totally.
Were there any other moral lessons that you guys got out of this?
Yes, I saw... expanding on the self-worth, the scene when Atreyu comes in and offers to save the world, and at first everyone doubted him.
I think that
shows that children can be really valuable, and anyone of any age can make difference, and I love that.
Yeah,
totally.
Here, here.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I thought it was a little odd that everyone was like, you're just a child. And then all of a sudden, he turns to leave. Oh, wait. Oh, you're leaving. Oh, well, then all of a sudden, you must be for real. I thought that was a little silly, but yeah.
But that's how kids get treated sometimes. I remember thinking that grown-ups didn't take me seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then when you turned and left, they all of a sudden took you seriously?
No, because...
Well, they were desperate.
Yeah, they were... The princess said that he was their only hope. So they're, oh, what? Well... Okay, I guess we'll give you a shot.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But I think that is a really good point, Valerie, that I certainly didn't think about the whole idea that they doubted him at the beginning, but that there's more than meets the eye.
Yeah.
As optimists might put it. What did you guys think of the music? I really liked it. I thought it was catchy, but what were your thoughts?
There were parts that I thought were really inspiring, even though it was at least the U.S. international version has mm-hmm. that synthetic.
Yeah.
Parts of it were really catchy. Other parts of it were kind of not. I really thought the Neverending Story. I for some reason that really got in my head, and I was singing it, you know, like the rest of that night in my head. It was, so there were parts that I liked, parts of it I felt were a little lacking.
Yeah.
I personally wish they would have. Apparently, the German version has a orchestral score there instead of the synthetic version.
Oh, interesting.
I
wonder what that would sound like.
Yeah, I don't know. But some of it, it's just silence. There is no score. So the U.S. version has that synthetic songs in there. So
mm-hmm.
From what I hear that the orchestral, from what I read online, the orchestral music seems to be better than the synthetic.
Mm.
But I enjoyed some of the parts anyway.
Okay.
I love the theme song, The Neverending Story.
I see. That's the one. the actual singing part of the theme song, I didn't really care for. I liked just the score theme a lot better, but.
I loved it as a little girl, and maybe it's partly sentimental for me, but when it came on, it made me feel good.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, but I will say this, if you ever go to YouTube and look up the music video,
mm-hmm.
it's horrendous.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Definitely don't put that as a YouTube then.
Yeah, but they actually did make a music video of that song, and there's some guy singing it along with footage of the movie, but it just makes me cringe watching it these days. Even though I did enjoy the song while watching the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for the warning, Paul.
You're welcome.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, public service announcement.
Exactly. Well, let's go ahead and sort of wrap up what we loved and liked. Paul, what was the one last thing that you really loved about the movie?
Whatever Valerie says.
Okay, Valerie, what was one last thing you really loved?
I have three things. Should I? I don't know how to do
it. How about pick one that you really want to talk about?
Okay.
And then we'll finish off with your two others, just like hitting on them real quickly.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Really elaborated one.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was a brilliant plot point to force Bastian to name the princess, because this forced him to use his imagination to save their world. And mm-hmm. that's part of what I think the whole theme of the movie is, the value of imagination.
Oh, and it's the open door to interact. Will you step forward or take this just as a book as mm-hmm. most everyone else would. That's interesting. I didn't think of that before.
Yeah, and it's sort of the idea of speaking life into something that it's almost like it needs you in order to propitiate? I don't think that's the right word. To just to continue on, like
just, you're part of the never-ending story.
Exactly. Yeah, I personally
involved him in much more.
Did you guys? Now, I wasn't quite sure, and Christy brought up this point. I'm curious if you guys caught this. That is probably his mom's name that he named the princess. Is that what you guys got?
Yeah, well, that's what he said.
That implies that. But then Moonchild doesn't sound like a mom's name.
Wait, so what, is that like IMDb? I didn't look up what the princess's
name was. We had
subtitles
on when we watched.
Oh, okay.
And
it says Moonshine?
Moonchild.
Oh. That's what it said the name was. Like,
and if you listen to it, if you go back and listen to it, it does, you can hear him say Moonchild amongst the lightning. It's what he shouts.
Oh, but
as a kid, when you're watching it without subtitles, I remember having conversations with friends like, oh, what do you think he said? Oh, I think he said Harriet.
Yeah.
You know?
It's hard to hear anything in that.
Yeah, totally. I was telling this with Valerie, I thought it would have been better if instead in the subtitles they just put incoherent in parentheses.
Yeah, keep the conversation going.
And the suspense, yeah.
Yeah, or shall I say never ending.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
Okay. Very cool. Okay. Yeah, what were your other two, Valerie?
Okay, kind of elaborating on that, the story also manages to incorporate the viewer, which is, I think, really unique. Mm-hmm. When the princess says others were watching you and they were with you when you hid from the bullies in the bookstore, so all of a sudden we realize she's talking about us, the viewers, and that, to me, kind of blew me away. It was like, they're making us part of the story.
Oh, I totally didn't catch on that. Wow.
Yeah, it goes from one level, the book, to two levels with the boy reading it, and then three levels with us, the viewers.
Yeah.
You know what I have to say about that?
Inception.
Yeah, you're too on the ball for me, Paul.
Yeah.
It was the first Inception. I love it.
Very cool.
Maybe that's what they want you to think.
Oh. And what was your last thing that you really liked about the movie?
Incidentally, both Paul and I noticed that the evil character is the one who reveals the whole theme and meaning of the movie, which we haven't seen in any other movie. Usually, you don't want to listen to whatever you don't want to trust or listen to whatever the evil character is saying, but he actually revealed the most important things in the movie.
Yeah, and I didn't think about this, but you mentioning that made me think that it's really interesting how he knows he's going to be destroyed, but he still wants to take out Atreyu before he's destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. As a kid, I didn't think, I thought the wolf was making it all up because he's a bad guy. He's untrustworthy. So he was just talking kind of like, luring the kid to let down his guard so he can attack him. Mm-hmm. So he was making all that stuff up about the nothing. It wasn't till I viewed this now, this last time as an adult, I was thinking, wow, this is what he's saying is actually true. Yeah. And I thought it was very curious, why would the authors have the main villain essentially describe what is going on? I thought that was a very interesting plot point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe not a good one.
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to think, I don't. I think it was fine that they chose to do that. It is certainly odd. It did. I almost felt like it was kind of a sink in terms of the pacing of the story to have him just sort of go on about this, just sort of to wrap it up so that the audience knew what all the nothing was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that seems like that could have come out a little bit better paced. Like, just like my thought that I just had there. Go ahead, Valerie.
I was going to say, I guess we've started talking about things we don't like. It's kind of a good intro.
Exactly. I was going to say that's something I didn't so much like. So let's move on to the things we either hated or just disliked. And let's start with Valerie this time.
Okay. This might sound nitpicky, but I really didn't like the relationship between the scientist and who he calls his wench. I thought they were really demeaning to each other, and it kind of bugged me.
I actually thought, I would agree with you that they're demeaning to one another, but I actually thought that that was one of the, up until that point, I wouldn't have said this, but after that time in the movie happened, it totally made me think that they're doing a lot of similar themes or vignettes that Princess Bride does.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. I didn't notice that except for that scene, and I thought, oh, this is where maybe the author birthed the idea from.
Oh, maybe. I can't recall off the top of my head the other similarities, but I do remember that there were similarities. I think, like,
just the luck dragon.
No, not the luck dragon, but Atreyu essentially mean meeting the. So if Atreyu is Wesley, then he meets the rock biter and the snail guy and the bat, and that's kind of like meeting Fezzik, who's the giant, and Vicini, who would, I guess, would be the snail guy, just because they seem a similar demeanor, and Inigo would be the bad guy because of their hair. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just pulled that out of the butthole of nowhere. Anyway.
And what would it be like if Samuel L. Jackson played the princess's guard? Sorry, that was random.
Wow. I'm tired of this nothing on this Fantasia plane. Oh, my. Paul, what was something you didn't like about the NeverEnding Story?
I talked about there were parts of the music that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Some of the... As detailed as some of the sets and the makeup was, I was... In some scenes, in others, it seemed not all the way finished. You know, does that make sense? It's kind of like you can tell in some scenes it looks really good, in other scenes you can tell like, oh, they just glued moss on this guy's face.
Oh, I thought you meant in terms of like the scene in terms of story, they didn't finish it out. They sort of abruptly ended.
No. Like building the sets adding to it. It seemed some seemed like it was put together real quickly, but yeah, this like, is real technical, you know?
Well, I was going to say like reusing the sphinxes for the Oracle. Come on.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed in, oh, they're just blue and they're going to, and then they say, don't worry, we're not going to hurt you. And I'm like, no, it's another trap.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that, going off this, I think this was, oh no, I was going to say it was the Sphinxes, but it wasn't. But at the very beginning, when Atreyu goes up and they doubt him and he's like, okay, fine, I'll go back to hunting the purple buffalo. And they're like, no, wait, okay, go on this quest for us, but you cannot take any weapons. I'm like, why? What sort of stupid advice is that? Why can't he take weapons? Take this snake thing. Because it's not going to do you much good, but take this.
It's because the princess knows, and that's her ways.
But he ended up using a weapon anyways to kill Gwarf, whatever that guy's name was.
Yeah, wolf. But if he had brought his own, he may have tried to use his own, and they wouldn't have worked as well. And he could have gotten killed in the process because he's trying to use his own rather than what was provided.
But... didn't he essentially get killed in the end anyways when the nothing tore everything apart and it was just Bastion and the princess?
No, Bastion brought everything back.
But before that, before he did, like, because they're still in the quiet of her room, her chamber. And then she says, you have to be the one that imagines everything back or something, right? Am I understanding that wrong?
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I'm being devil's advocate to your point, Paul, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of lost, but that's okay. It's not the first and it won't be the last.
What was something else that you didn't like, Valerie?
Okay, I feel like it encouraged kids to, again, this is going to sound nitpicky, but it encourages kids to skip class to read. And I feel like this implies that knowledge is less valuable than imagination. And while that can be debated, I think that both should be valued.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's almost two sides of the same coin. You need knowledge in order to have a basis for your imagination, and you need imagination to spur on the limits of knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, going off of that, things that I didn't like that whole plot thing where he locks himself in the school attic, and then, like, when school's over, he doesn't leave. He just waits for the doors to close, and he goes right back up. I'm like, what the? Is this really happening?
Well, where did you expect him to go, Paul?
Home.
Well,
poor
but,
dad.
Well, the thing was, yeah, I do agree with the poor dad in that case, but I think, given the scene they had at the beginning, I think he would have been even more upset with his son, or disappointed in his son, for reading another book because he doesn't understand that this is how his son is expressing his creativity and learning and his hobby, as opposed to his dad, who doesn't understand and just wants him to do sports or whatever.
So his son just goes missing, because that makes everything better.
No, a luck dragon finds him, and they go and defeat the bullies.
I thought we were talking of... Oh, so that's the lesson that kids should learn.
Yes.
Is run away to find a luck dragon.
Correct.
And defeat your bullies and ignore your dad.
Yeah. I'm glad you picked up on this finally, Paul.
Okay.
No, that is definitely not the lesson kids should take away from this.
Okay. But it is kind of a lesson to, I didn't like the, I guess, usurping authority.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I don't think that was a major thing. I think that was just sort of a means to an end. They wanted him to be alone for a large chunk of time, and that was the easiest way to get him alone.
Are you kidding me? His dad is not home. He's working. So what a better time there is. Leave school, go home, and finish reading your book alone. You've already established that the dad isn't there that much.
Yeah, I guess you could just sort of talk that away. Like, he leaves a message on the answering machine or something saying, I'm going to be late.
Yeah.
Dinners, eat leftovers or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
He was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
So.
I don't have a good answer for
you. I guess this was more interesting. I don't know.
And they kind of have a theme of him escaping his problems, which I actually don't really like either.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. Now I hate this movie.
No! It's totally
I'm joking.
Good.
I do want to say, though, I felt like he was doing the right thing in terms of running away from the bullies. But
right.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of the bullies, oh my gosh, I hate bullies in general. I mean, I don't know them personally, so I guess I shouldn't hate them, but...
Watch out, bullies out there. Francisco's after you.
I don't like the idea of bullies. If Sophia... The one thing that Sophia could do is grow up to be a bully of some kind, whether it's actually beating kids up, which I guess is possible, or using words to tear other people down. I would be so, so angry. I mean, unbelievably angry with her if she did that. Okay, let me come down a little bit. But I as soon as I saw these kids, and I know it was is more the style of anything, but my own retribution was when I saw the bullies called Bastion weirdo. I said, weirdo? Who are the dorks with the square box backpacks?
Everybody then.
I know.
That was the 80s.
But from my high horse of 2013, I could say, psh, you're the weirdos.
That's your little quip?
Exactly.
Good for you, Francisco. I hope you feel better about yourself.
I feel so much better. Yeah. No.
A little pat on the back for yourself there.
Oh goodness.
Although I did think that was one of the least. It's not the best performance of acting at that scene where he comes out of the bookstore. He goes, oh, no, not again. Not again.
Yeah, that was a little weak.
Yeah.
How did you guys feel, though, about the end where he chases the bullies? Like using the power of Elect Dragon to chase bullies like that. What do you think?
What goes around comes around. You reap what you sow.
I didn't like it. Of course, it made me feel good. Like, you know, it's a feel good scene in one way. But then when I thought about it, I was like, hey, they're kind of glorifying revenge. So what happened to being the better person? You know?
Exactly.
Oh, that comes later.
Well, he could have lived
in the never ending story 2 and 3.
He should have lived by example of not forcing them back into the dumpster.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would have been even better if he's like, certainly if you see this dragon come at you, it would be intimidating. But if he says something like, you know what, guys, let's stop this stupid bullying crap. And how about you come and take a ride with me on this Elect Dragon? Let's be friends. And then
you're
if they say
right,
no.
Johnny. Oh my gosh. No, what did he say? You're all right, Daniel, or something like the
he
karate
just said, you're all right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I love that part of this movie.
I
love it.
I hate that.
Why?
Yeah, we didn't like that.
It's too quick of a resolution.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine if they eventually get to that point, but it's just the end. And if you had that kind of resolution here, it'd be too quick.
No, that's a good, that's a really
I
good point.
I saw it coming. Saw it coming because his boss or whatever said, kick his leg or, you know, maim him basically. He had this horrified look and I was like, oh, he's, you know, second thinking all this. So then when he won, I was like, okay, he was started heading this direction and now he's choosing to grow.
Yeah. And if you want to have, listen to more discussion about the Karate Kid, I urge you to go listen to retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP21 where we talk all about it. I'm sorry, 20, that's not 21. And we discuss the Karate Kid, including the You're All Right sequence at the end. Of course, me, Paul, and Bill fell on a different place than Valerie did. But let's get back to the never-ending story.
Okay.
You're all right, Francisco.
Thanks, Paul. I think I've gone through everything I didn't like about the movie. Was there anything else you guys didn't like?
I can't think of any. I think I mentioned, the whole idea, it seemed preposterous that he would spend the night at a school. It's not that it, like, he would set off alarms or anything, but, you know, that the way they closed this, never mind. Yeah, I said everything.
Okay, Valerie?
Nothing more that I don't like. I'd love to share my favorite quote of the movie.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and do that.
All right. Fantasia has no boundaries because dreams have no boundaries.
Oh, that's a feel-good line if I ever heard one.
Love it.
Makes me feel kind of funny inside.
Oh, my gosh. Just before we close out here, I do want to bring up, and we've spoken about these a little bit, but I do want to get your guys' thoughts. When in the very beginning, the snail race guy and the bat guy, I forget their names, I'm sorry, they're just sitting sort of waiting in camp, and then the rock buyer comes in. You remember this scene?
Yes.
And after the rock buyer talks to them, they're like, we need to get to the princess.
Yes, they reminded them that, okay, never mind, I'll let you finish.
Yeah, I was going to say, they obviously... They told the rock biter what they were doing there, that they were sent from their people because of the nothing to find the princess. And they're just sitting there, and all of a sudden when the rock biter gets there, oh, yeah, we need to get going. What is that about?
Okay. Back in the old days, like in the pioneer days and the old west days, people would, as they were traveling, camp for the night, okay?
Yeah.
So they were camped for the night like they did back then when there was less civilization. So when they meet this stranger, it's like, hey, we're from this area, basically north, south, east, and west, and we're all going to the princess to let them know about this destruction. They didn't realize that the destruction was that far north or that far west or that far east, and it was coming, and they figured they had more time. But if the destruction is that massive, as they're talking about it, they're like, hey, we better get there, the sooner the better, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, the talking inspired them to go and like get this resolved as quick as possible. There's no time to break for camp at night. It's just like, hey, let's go, go, go.
I will accept that. Valerie, did you have anything to add to that?
No, that sounds good.
Okay. Then riddle me this.
Yes.
Bastion somehow gets drawn into the actual story of the Neverending Story.
Yeah.
And the prince,
by saying the name.
Yeah. And Princess Moonshine says to Bastion, yes, I purposely got that name wrong.
Okay. It's not Moonshine, but I can't remember what it is.
Moonchild, yeah.
Child, yeah, okay.
Tells Bastion that he can now create and imagine the world all on his own. Am I remembering that right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So is he in fact, he remembers all of Fantasia, and then is he actually building a part of his real world inside of Fantasia? So the bullies and Valcor and all of them are still in Fantasia, and it's just an echo of the bullies, and he's not really affecting the real bullies in his world, but he's in now in this parallel Fantasia Earth dimension, and that's where he's flying off the bullies and flying through the real world, quote unquote.
That's all fantasy. Like, when the evil character defined Fantasia, he said it symbolizes the world of human fantasy. So it's none of it's real.
Okay, so bullies, that's not real.
Yeah, it was his fantasy of revenge. Oh.
See,
I don't know if that makes it worse or better.
I take it as it's open ended. It could be either or, because just as he traveled into fantasy, he could also travel from fantasy into reality.
Well, see, I don't buy that, because you can travel into fantasy because of your imagination. Imagination doesn't escape back through you.
Have you been to Disneyland?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I've been to Disneyland, Paul.
All right. Case closed.
All right, guys. Well, I think it's about that time for the moment of truth. So, Alice, do you have a firing solution for us?
Firing solution complete. Rating salvo at the ready. On your mark.
Let's go around and talk about whether we think The Neverending Story was a classic or second class. And Valerie, let's go ahead and start. Actually, we'll start with Paul, but Valerie, just so you know, please tell us why you consider it a classic or second class. So when we get to you. Paul, go ahead.
Okay. The way I rate if it's a classic or second class is if I had a group of peers over and they've never seen it before, and would I recommend that they see it? I would say it's tough, but I would say yes, that I think that they should see it, because it's very imaginative, and it's very, to me, it's inspiring with imagination and very creative. So I would rate this as a classic.
And it's not too kiddie in that whole imaginative area.
Not too kiddie and not too silly, even though it does have its less adult like qualities. Whoa. Sorry, my mic. I just dropped the mic. Boom, the end.
All right, so that's a classic from Paul. How about you, Valerie? Classic or second class?
Classic, very easy for me. And how I would define it, two ways really. One is I'd recommend it with enthusiasm for someone who hasn't seen it.
Okay.
And then the second thing is, it doesn't lose all its magic as an adult. Every movie, I think, loses a little bit of magic if you loved it as a child. But there's still some magic left when you see it as an adult, and that was true of this movie.
Okay.
And I concur on both of those.
So would both of you recommend this movie to someone who had seen it as a kid but hasn't seen it in a long time?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we definitely have a classic on our hands, but is it unanimous or disputed? Well, I got to tell you guys, I was really, really torn about which way to go. I was going back and forth, trying to think of the pros and cons, because all in all, I didn't necessarily enjoy this movie. I certainly enjoy it. It's almost like, because the movie as a whole didn't seem to seem, it seemed like it was just the sum of its parts, not more than the sum of its parts. Like, each part could be good or bad, and there are more good parts than bad parts, but on the whole, it wasn't for me. I just didn't feel as drawn in as I do other movies. On the other hand,
did you fall asleep?
Almost. I didn't, but I almost did. On the other hand, it is a movie I think I would want to show Sophia because of some of the things we've talked about, and I think it is a very imaginative movie, and I think we're going to wait to show it to her till she's a bit older than probably we saw it, just because of those scary elements, especially with the wolf.
It's culture. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I can choose to shield my daughter how I see fit, Paul.
I don't know. Society says otherwise.
Oh, my gosh. But you know what? So what I ended up deciding was, okay, I'm actually going to just, for the first time ever in Retro Rewind podcast history.
You can't.
What the are you talking about?
You can't.
Say you have to choose.
Let me finish.
Say the name.
I decided beforehand that I would see how the conversation went, and I would determine my rating based on our roundtable, which is really how roundtables should be decided. But we usually have decided beforehand. But because I thought you guys brought up so many good points, and there's a lot of meat in this movie that I didn't occur to me, and I think I would like to discover again rewatching, I think I'm going to have to rate The NeverEnding Story a classic as well.
Woo-hoo! Boom. Boom. Boom.
What happened there?
That was you at the end, adding your booms. According to the Retro Rewind podcast, The NeverEnding Story is a unanimous classic. Definitely go out and see this movie, whether you've seen it or before as a kid or haven't seen it yet.
I thought you were going to say beforehand, you know, it's the first time I'm not going to weigh in on this undecided.
Yeah, undecided.
Oh, that's what you were saying. No, I will always make a decision.
Okay, that's why I was like, no, you have to say it. Whatever it is, you have to say it. You can't go undecided.
You can take it to the bank, listeners. I will never be undecided on my final rating.
Never say never.
Oh, my gosh. Let's move on. Alice, would you please see what's new on our tubes?
New tube systems engaged.
Let's start with Valerie. What is something, either like a new TV show or a movie, or just something contemporary that's been new on your tube?
I've really been enjoying photography lately, and especially this photo editing program called Picasa, which is actually free.
And
so the older I get, the more I've found I love photography. So it helps me take a photo I could have taken like 10 years ago and turn it from a just so-so photo into a great photo. So I love that.
Very cool. Have you, speaking of photo editing software, do you mainly use Picasa on your computer or on your phone?
On my computer.
Okay.
It's easier.
If you have, I don't know if it'd work as well on a phone. I know on my iPad, I don't do it as often as I would like, but I enjoy using something called Snapseed, which is
also a
Google property.
I was about to say it's by Google as well, and I use Snapseed on my phone, but I prefer Picasa.
Oh, really? Okay.
To Snapseed because I think it has almost all the functions that Snapseed has, but a lot more.
Oh, okay. I've never used Picasa on the desktop, so good to know.
Yeah.
Thank you for recommending that, Valerie. Paul, Paul, what is new on your tube?
What is new on my tube is actually a book I've been reading lately.
Book?
Yeah. You know those things? It's because actually I'm in the process of writing a book myself.
Yeah, I was going to ask how that's going.
It's
it's going.
It's going.
Yeah, but this book actually helps. It's called Invisible Ink by Brian McDonald.
Okay.
And a lot of the people from Pixar, their think tank, use this book when trying to figure out story ideas or story plot lines.
Oh, very awesome.
And Brian McDonald, they invite him, a lot of the animation studios, whenever they're working on stories and stuff, invite him to come down and workshop with them through their stories.
Very cool.
If you're writing a story and you're stuck plot-wise, I would recommend reading Invisible Ink. It's a light read. It's kind of quick. It has a lot of it's not terribly complicated, and it's not like, oh, this is genius, this is the answer. But it definitely helps push in the right direction.
Okay. Well, very awesome. Cool. Thank you for recommending that.
Sure. And Francisco, what is new on your tube?
Why, thank you for asking, Paul. What is new on my tube is I've been watching a lot of things on YouTube that have to do with, like, essentially explaining science in layman's terms. Oh. I guess that'd be the best way to describe it. And one of a channel I've subscribed to recently that I want to recommend is called Vsauce, like the letter V as in Valerie, and then the word sauce. And it's just really interesting. It is the guy who does it essentially takes a question that's kind of out there and, based on science, determines whether it's feasible or not. Like, for instance, some of the ones he's done is, how high could we build? If we were to build something as high up as we could go, how high could we build it? Or if everyone on the planet jumped at the same time, would it affect the Earth's gravity? Or if you shot a bullet in space, would it go on forever? Just interesting things like that. I find interesting anyways. Yeah. So I would definitely recommend that. So cool. Just search for Vsauce on YouTube. There's actually three Vsauces: Vsauce 2 and Vsauce 3. 2 is more for like sort of gaming type stuff. And 3, I forget what 3 is.
But you recommend the original.
I recommend the original. The others are fine too, but I recommend the original. So that's what's new on my tube.
Okay. So if Link were to get the Master Sword and have his hearts full and swing his sword, and it would that energy would shoot out and he shot it up into space, how long would that energy go?
I have no idea. That's an awesome question, though.
And if there was a chicken on another planet, would it reach it?
What?
You know how you can swipe and hit chickens in Legends of Zelda?
Yeah, but you don't hit them up.
If they're up above you.
Oh, I guess they're in the 3D Zeldas, maybe. I didn't think about that.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah. Lame question.
Derailing told me, you Paul.
Told you I had a question for you today.
Oh, my gosh. All right, guys. Let's move on to getting the communication satellites up.
ComSat online. Receiving incoming transmission.
So we don't have any feedback this time, and part of that is my lame fault. I didn't write anything on Facebook that we're doing the never-ending story. So I bet there's plenty of people that have feedback, but...
That's because you would have never-ending feedback.
Oh, my gosh. That joke never gets old.
It's never-ending. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and tell people how they can get in touch with us. Valerie, how could if people want to reach out to you, do you have a Twitter or an email you'd like to give out?
Well, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
And then, sure, my email is valeriepowers2003@yahoo.com.
Okay, awesome. And Paul, how can people reach you?
They can reach me on Facebook or Twitter at Paul J. Powers and pauljpowers.com.
Very cool. And you can reach me, Francisco, on Twitter. I'm at FXRuizX. And you can also find me on Facebook. And you can find the show on a number of places. Paul, where's one place they can find the show?
On Twitter.
Yes, on Twitter now. Do you remember the handle?
No.
It is at Retro Rewind Cast.
Oh, that's much like the Pinterest.
Yeah, speaking of which, we are also on Pinterest. Check us out, Pinterest.com/Retro Rewind Cast. We have boards for movie posters. Like, we try to pick not just standard movie posters that you'd see at the bus stop, but new ones, new art, like ones that people have done recently, but of the old movies we like to cover on the Retro Rewind podcast. And also like toys from yesteryears and old and iconic characters. So definitely check that out. And then do you know where else we are, Paul?
Facebook.
We are on Facebook. And what's the address for that?
.com. Facebook.com/RetroRewindPodcast.
Exactly. And if you want to get in touch with us, find us on any of those. But if you want to get in touch with us on old-fashioned email, that's just feedback@RetroRewindPodcast.com.
Finally, and they can rate us on iTunes.
They can rate us on iTunes. The easiest way to get to our page is RetroRewindPodcast.com/iTunesRRP. And definitely, we'd love if you leave us a rating or review. That'll help us be seen more visibly by other people that search for podcasts like ours. So thank you to everyone who's left a rating. And even more so, thank you everyone who just listens and downloads the episodes. It's so cool. We had an amazing month of downloads, the highest number of downloads we've ever had thus far. So that was totally cool. And we really appreciate you for listening and downloading this fun show of ours that we like doing so much.
Oh, wow. We had 3 downloads. Cool.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'll tell you how many after. Anyway.
All right.
So thank you, listener. And I also want to thank Valerie for being on the show for the first time.
You're welcome.
Yeah, definitely awesome to have your voice. And thank you, Paul, as always.
Yeah. And thank you, Francisco, for being such a great host.
Double yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Like a Pokemon, we'll catch you later on the next Retro Rewind podcast.
Retro Rewind mission complete. Proceed to Nath Point Omega and return to base.
Valcor.
He does shout Valcor, huh?
Yeah.
I've been doing that. Roger Moonchild.